Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Face Us, the radio show where we confront the serious corruption happening in courtrooms across America and the world. Today's courts are riddled with problems stemming from the unchecked greed and unethical behavior of court-appointed and for-hire attorneys and other court officials. We stand with the honest and honorable judges and attorneys and service professionals trying to clean up this mess and restore integrity to our justice system. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to face us. Today is Wednesday, October 4th, 2023, and I'm Robin Austin. I'm with my co-host, Lou Ann Fleming.
Right. Hello, everybody. Good evening. We are welcoming Hillary Hogue as well. Say hello to everyone.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for being with us this Wednesday evening. And we are grateful for our listeners, and we're here to support everyone and anyone who's going through more than likely the worst experience in their lives. So thanks so much for having me again, Luann and Robin.
Right. We appreciate it. Marcy
Freeman.
It's our
honor and our privilege.
Right. Marcy Freeman's taking the night off. She's been working a lot, and she needed a night off. So I always tell my co-host, you need a night off, take it off, right?
That's right.
Anyway,
exactly.
We decided to talk about stress tonight. I mean, Robin and I were talking earlier. We've had so many phone calls lately on people calling us up and saying, what do you do about the stress, court intervention? They've got my mom, they've got my dad, they've got my uncle, they got my cousin. And I tell them, you know, you just got to take time for yourself. You've got to de-stress. And I know how that feels because I myself was in the court system for 10 years and my family was extremely stressed out. So one thing I did is I went to school on the internet for like 10 months, almost a year, becoming a certified aromatherapist. So that helped me a lot in the court system because I figured out how to bring inhalers and all kinds of things to de-stress, and it does help. But that's one thing we're going to talk about. Hillary, do you have anything you want to talk about before we get into our discussion tonight? What's going on in Florida?
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on in Florida, but I don't want to really talk about it because it's under investigation. And so I'll hold back, but I will say that it does have to do with real estate fraud in the guardianship system and how guardians are selling property with the market analysis, which aren't appraisals. And believe it or not, one of the inspector generals is she said it was egregious. So hoping that that goes through. And the stress is overwhelming, though. It never goes away. PTSD, you know, there's nothing like it. And it just takes me back to where I was 6 years ago and had no outlet. No one would help me. The police, the court system, the judges, the attorneys, elder affairs, OPPG, and I was at a loss. I was fired from my job. I had two young children that I couldn't focus on because of the stress. And again, I must give many, many kudos to this show that now I'm a co-host on. It was the only outlet for me. Every Wednesday, I would rush and get the boys and bring them home so I could listen in to like-minded victims, and it was what kept me going. And a lot of times for people, keeps them alive because suicide is huge, you know? I mean, we look at that case in Sarasota, which has a lot of parallels to guardianship, where the mother, the daughter was taken away from DCF, and all the allegations turned out to be false, but the only way she thought that her daughter could get out from under was for her to commit suicide, which she did. And that is a mother's love. So, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I wish I could say, you know, that it wasn't happening, but the stress is a killer physically and mentally.
It truly is. I remember when Luann and her family were in the midst of some of the worst of it, both her and her sister, I was very close to the family really all the time at that time, and both her and her sister gave me their phones. They said, "We just can't take any more. Will you please handle all the phone calls?" So people would call them and they'd get me, and I would just explain, "No, they're under a little too much stress, and so I'm fielding all their calls." And just to take some of the heat off of them, it was because they both were suffering from adrenal exhaustion, PTSD, cortisol levels to the roof. You know, their health was suffering. Their mental state was a wreck. It was just profoundly unsettling for them to be going through it. And, of course, it was stressful for me, but it wasn't anywhere near as stressful because it wasn't my family. It wasn't my, you know, I didn't have a dog in that fight. I was just on the sidelines, and yes, I was rooting for and defending and protecting and trying to help my loved ones in the situation, but I wasn't directly affected and directly involved. So it was much easier for me than it was for them, and you know, I've been in situations where my stress was truly intolerable and truly mind-blowing, and the ways to, you know, get through that, it's important to understand what to do. I mean, mm-hmm. In 2004, after 4 years of dealing with kidney failure and kidney dialysis, my wife died after a kidney transplant. And then a month later, right on New Year's morning, I got a knock at the door, and my son had been to a New Year's party and didn't come home. He died at that party, and it was undetermined exactly the cause, but they think it was a combination of alcohol and OxyContin. And so I think, you know, I know that he was depressed. I mean, he had just lost his mother a month before, and he had lost 9 of his friends in 3 years before that to various accidents, to suicide, to various things. And he, you know, he was an extremely sensitive person. And I don't think it was an intentional thing, but I think he just, you know, mixed the wrong things at a party, and then couldn't wake up when he needed to vomit and choked. And so I had to deal with both of these things pretty much all at once. I mean, about a month apart, because my wife died just before Thanksgiving and he died just on New Year's Day. And so so you can imagine. I mean, or maybe you can't imagine, but the stress that I was under, I was falling apart. I would go to work, and I couldn't work. I was a barber, and most of my clients, I worked in a college town, and most of my clients were about my son's age, and as a barber, it was more men than women. And so I was cutting these young men's hair, and I would just start crying because it would remind me of my son too much. And I'd be standing there cutting their hair and crying, and I just couldn't continue to work very much, and and my business,
Robin,
fell apart. I lost business.
Yeah.
You know,
Robin,
so
have you seen on Netflix? It's the name of the movie, true to life. It's called Painkiller, and it's all about the OxyContin and this family. You've got to watch it. You know that it's just unbelievable how OxyContin, it was like the crack. And so sad, you know, so sad.
Yes.
The pain that we feel, yes. and you know, anything to get rid of that pain that we feel. I mean, my mother's been dead 20 years, and I miss my mother so much. I mean, I love my dad, but I would give him away to get my mother back. And
yeah.
The pain is real, you know, and for a father to lose a son, I'm sure most people could never commiserate unless they've been through something similar.
No, that's true. I mean,
right.
The depth of what that feels like is
mm-hmm.
something that there's no way to speak of it, and there's really no way to understand it if you haven't been in it somewhere pretty deep in that neighborhood, because
right.
you just don't, we don't go through that kind of pain on a day-to-day basis, thank God, you know. If we're fortunate in life, that's the kind of thing that happens once in a lifetime, and but to get hit by two of my close family members dying, I mean, my whole life was really,
yeah.
it was like the three of us that were left, because I had a daughter and a son that were still alive, we felt like a bomb had gone off in our life, because that's how much it took away from us, and it destroyed all of the ideas that I had in my mind of hopes and dreams and plans of, you know, what, how the family would be. And now I'm the father, and I have to try to fill the role of, you know, both parents for my two children. And my daughter was just, 14 at the time that her mother died. And my son, 15, and he, you know, he was having a terrible time. I know he and I both suffered from the feeling that of, you know, as a father, I couldn't escape thinking, well, what could, you know, did I do something wrong? Could I have done something different? I couldn't escape it. I mean, I do realize that my children have always told me that I'm a wonderful father. And I did, you know, I talked to my kids about drugs, and I talked to my kids about, and I was one of the most open and honest and fair and just fathers that I knew how to be. And that's what my children will tell you. If you ask the ones that are still alive, they'll say,
mm-hmm.
Oh, my father's wonderful. Because
right.
My father wasn't so wonderful. And I learned a lot from that
mm-hmm.
about what kind of person and what kind of man I wanted to be in the presence of my children and how I wanted to raise them. And I was very gentle. I used persuasion and gentle persuasion, not the kind where you beat them with a stick, which was pretty much how I was raised. So my kids grew up thinking for themselves and able to honor themselves and able to listen with an open heart and
mm-hmm.
to learn for themselves a lot. And so I know, you know, intellectually I didn't really do anything wrong, but at the same time, the heart aches so much, and it's such a difficult thing that you torture yourself thinking, did I do wrong? Could I have done better? What might I have done differently? You know, I mean, maybe I was too open. Maybe I didn't spank my children enough. Maybe I didn't, you know, I don't know. It's like you just can't not do that. And my other son said, you know, when we were having frank discussions, he said, you know, Dad, I was his older brother, and I felt like I should have protected him from that kind of thing, and I didn't. And so he was feeling a lot of that same kind of guilt
mm-hmm.
that was torturing me. And each of us had this impact in our life. And my daughter, you know, had just lost the two people that she was closest to, really, that, you know, that was the brother that was closest to her in age, and her mother, who had raised her since she was a baby and was involved in her life until she died. And, you know, I mean, I was working when she was raising the children, so there was more intimacy in that relationship than with her and I, although we have a beautiful relationship and always have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, very much aware that it was a huge loss for all of us. And so I know something about going through extremely stressful times and surviving through times when you just don't, you know. I mean, I remember one day I walked into a store and I was buying some things and I wasn't sure. I didn't know. I couldn't formulate, now what do I have in my bank account? And I knew I had some money, but I didn't know how much. And my finances were in a shambles. My business was gone, and I didn't know how much I had in the bank, and I wasn't sure if I'd be able to afford the groceries I was buying. And I made a habit of always, as I would go into a grocery store, I have a mind that I like to use to calculate the things that I need to calculate. So I would go through, and I would add it up as I go and see how close I could get. And usually I'd be within a dollar, you know, very, very close. I mean, a few cents here and there sometimes, but most of the time I could know what my receipt was going to be at the end of a shopping trip. And this day I was adding all of that up like I usually did, and it just dawned on me, I realized suddenly that it was this mental exercise and that none of those things I called numbers had actual meanings. They were just these glyphs, these ciphers. It was like I was speaking Greek to myself or something. And then as this dawned on me, I looked around the store and I thought, all of these people are just going through their life. They're buying things or doing things, and they're all just living their lives. And I was sort of tortured because I thought, you know, how can they do that? How can they just be okay? Mm-hmm. I don't get that, you know. And as I was going to the cashier, I thought, you know, I honestly don't have any idea if I'm going to be able to buy these groceries or not. And if there's not money in the account, I will just walk away. I'm not going to try to see if I have another card or see. I'm just going to walk away because I'm not able to deal with that at this moment in my life. And I realized this is what it is to be teetering on the brink of insanity.
Exactly. And
my mind wasn't working properly, and I was heartbroken and shattered and didn't know how to, you know, I couldn't use my mind anymore. I couldn't calculate the things that I normally could. It was devastating. And of course the reality is, when you go to a court where you're expecting that there will be some kind of justice, that there will be a judge who's going to judge fairly, there will be arguments one way and then arguments the other way, and then someone's going to go, okay, I've listened to everybody's arguments, and the thing that's reasonable and fair and just is this, so that's what I'm going to do. When you've been raised, like most of us in this country and maybe throughout the world, but mostly in this country, at least my age, were raised to believe, and I think the vast majority of people even today, except maybe the youngest, are starting to see what happened to Brittany and to others. But we believed that courts were places of justice. And when you get into a court and now all of a sudden you find that the place where you've gone for justice is a criminal organization that seems, you know, I mean, I hate to say that because I don't want to dishonor the good and honest judges and the good and honest attorneys that do justice in a courtroom to their clients. And I honor those people and I thank you for your service. But to those that do injustice in the courtroom,
we hear so many stories.
We hear hundreds, thousands of stories.
You
know? And to those who do injustice, you are the worst kind of criminal.
Right.
You're worse than some of the people that society labels as criminals, because you are a hypocrite who pretends to be helping while you are exercising destructive force in someone. So that you can pilfer, rob, and steal from them, and you actually feel good about it. You think you're doing something right because you're successful in the eyes of society.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you, I mean, you know, the worst.
Going, you know, taking from elderly people and their homes and their family, I think personally is a crime. But I also have a parallel life, kind of like Robin did. I also lost a husband of 28 years of marriage. He died in my front yard. His heart stopped, and my son and I found him. And you talk about the most severe stress I think I've ever had in my life. I was shocked. I walked around not knowing what I was doing for a long time. I mean, I was so freaked out. I lost it. I lost it so many times. I mean, it's hard to deal with. And then you go on, you deal with that. Then all of a sudden, here comes the probate court. You know, the family's not getting along. Issues, mom's, you know, dad dies. And all of a sudden, you've got five properties thrown into a probate court with a disgruntled brother, public administrators, people coming out, judges, trust courts, lawyers, attorneys, every direction, raising up fees, property being sold, families being kicked out. You become so stressed out that life seems unbearable. And it gets to the point of where all of a sudden your mom's missing. Your mom's been gone. I didn't see her for 3.5 years. We got her back after a long, big battle, but we got her back, but all the property's gone. So that stress stays with you. So through all of that, I had to figure out how to deal with my stress. So I, you know, I did a lot of learning and living, and I started drinking, actually. And I told Robin, I said, man, that Coke, I can't drink a Coke without Drummond. And he goes, it sounds like you're becoming an alcoholic. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't lose my mind with that. So then I decided to go to school, online courses for 10 months and become a certified aromatherapist and essential oil expert. So now and I study a lot about health and nutrition. And certified aromatherapy is really cool. I mean, I really enjoy it. It's given me a lot of my life back. I think a lot about issues that, man, I've got some severe stress. But, you know, come talk to me on the radio show tonight. If you want to know a remedy, I'm certified. I can help you out with whatever stress you have. And basically what an aromatherapist is using oils to promote physical and emotional well-being. And we're individually working with like a patient consultant. And we use natural plant extracts to improve the health of body, mind, and spirit. So, and also Robin has also taken this course as well. And he's hoping to become certified in aromatherapy at all. But talk about stress. I mean, just today I got really stressed out. And I came home and had to make two or three remedies just to get through the show.
We had doctor's appointments and then more than 3 hours on the phone with the insurance company about who's going to pay for all this because they had some error in the billing that wasn't getting paid. And that wasn't the only thing because one doctor had left one office and then went to another office, but they didn't stay there, so they went to another office. So we, for the third time in just about as many months, we were changing who the insurance goes to. It was just a big messed up thing that was hugely stressful, you know, because by about the third hour, you can't really get the on hold music out of your brain.
So I come home today and I put together some really quick solutions. And being certified, and I want to talk a lot about this because I am eventually going to open up an online store and I'll be giving discounts to a lot of the probate people. Because I tell you, going into a court, I've done almost everything imaginable. I remember when I had to get guardianship of my husband, and he became quite ill when he was like 46 years old or something like that. I went into court with these big glasses on, these big dark glasses on. I'm like, I'm going to hide back here, you know, no one's going to see me. And my heart was thumping out of my chest. And they called my name, and I thought for sure I was going to pass out. So I go up there, and the judge tells me, you need to take off your dark glasses. And I said, I can't see without them. They're prescription, you know. So they said, okay, well, we'll let you do that, but next time try not to do that. And I was so stressed out, I thought, well, what can I do? And I'm breathing techniques. You know, and I'm tapping on my legs, I'm tapping on my arms, I've done everything. But just to get out of that court was a huge victory that day because the courts finally realized that my husband did need help, but I was going to become the guardian and his father was going to be the conservator. So back in that day, 20-some years ago, he's been gone for 18 years, 19 years, The courts weren't as shallow as they are now, because I had that same judge for my mom's case, and it didn't work out very well on that case at all. So, but Robin and I are going to talk a lot about the stressful situations and what you can do to prepare for court and situations you can do. And if you any of you need any help with the aromatherapy part, I can send you something. I can do whatever you need to, because getting through court is essential. And I know
it
how
really
stressful it
is. It really is. And and that's and you know, because in court the stakes are high. You can lose your home. You can lose your family. They can take away your business. They can take away your home. They can take away everything, really, your freedom, your name, your bank accounts, your jewelry, your and whatever you've got. If they choose to, if they decide they want it enough and they can come up with just about any pretext that that gives them an excuse, they're perfectly willing to take everything you've got. And that's the horrifying reality of what it is to be trapped in the unethical courts that exist in this country today. And like I said, not all of them are unethical courts, but there are some courts that are just flat out criminal organizations in this country.
Right.
Today.
And we're going to be
in my opinion.
Yeah, we're going to be having quite a few guests that come on. We're going to be talking about that. So I'm lining them up right now. And if you have an idea or anything you want to do to add, you know, to our weekly shows, you can do that. You can reach us at faceusradio@hotmail.com, F-A-C-E-U-S radio at hotmail.com. You can also find us up on Twitter. You can also find us on Families Against Court Embezzlement Unethical Standards, Face Us, on Facebook. And you can also reach out to me on Messenger, Loanne Fleming. There's Robin Austin. There's Marcy Friedman, Hillary Hogue. And Hillary, you were talking earlier how stressed out you were in your case. Did you ever try to do certain remedies that could help you? I mean, did you ever think about what you could do?
At the time, it was, you know, sink or swim. And no, I was a complete wreck. Complete wreck. I didn't even, you know, at the time think that there was anything that could help me other than this show that we're on right now. But now where I am, you know, I tell victims that reach out that if there's a court date and their family, you know, the negative family members are there, just to go in. You know you've done nothing wrong. Stand proud, and you're there for your loved one, for your parents, you know. Because,
right.
Honestly, I'll wait for the two of you, Rob and Luann, to basically let us know what we can do. Because we do need some sort of way to decompress.
Right. And, you know, and we, Rob and I talk a lot about these situations because we've been stressed out, man. I tell you what, to the hill.
Well, you know, the fundamental advice, the thing that helped me to keep going is to keep going.
Yeah.
In other words, one foot in front of the other, one breath
just
at
breathe.
A time.
Mm-hmm.
You can get through a day.
Yeah.
And one day at a time, you can get through your life and you can make progress to the point where it does get easier over time. And so, you know, that's the fundamental thing, is don't give up, but keep going. And if you just have to withdraw into yourself and feel your pain, I understand. I mean, I laid on the floor for hours and cried, but eventually I got up, and it was one foot in front of the other. It was one breath at a time. It was one face at a time of the people I met. You know, it's take the moment that you're in, and just live this moment and live it in the way that you can get through it the best. And that's, you know, there are deep breathing is one thing that is.
Oh,
that can
helped, yeah.
change your metabolism in a matter of a few moments because you can go from, you know, because one of the things that happens when we are stressed is our breathing becomes, our chest becomes tight, our breathing becomes rapid,
right.
our vision narrows, So if you consciously slow down your metabolism,
mm-hmm.
and the easiest way to do that is to slow your breathing.
Right.
If you consciously slow your breathing by saying, okay, I've got to calm down and take a deep breath.
You breathe in for 4 seconds, right?
Hold it for just a moment and breathe out very slowly.
Yeah, it helps.
And you do that 3 times, your metabolism has, your heart already begins
mm-hmm.
to slow down its beat. You also, there are various kinds of tapping. I listened to a lot of YouTube videos and that kind of thing. I spent some time online, but one day I was listening to one, and this person was talking about how he overcame insomnia. And he did it by tapping. And he did it by just taking his hand and tapping on his leg. And he said he did it at the rhythm of a brisk walk. And he said, do that for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And what will happen is your metabolism will start to synchronize, because there's something called entrainment, whereby your brain and your metabolism will tend to synchronize with a rhythmic sound that's around you. And if you are doing a tapping, then your brain and your metabolism are synchronizing with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you can hear the soft clapping that I'm doing while I'm doing this, but I have just been slowing it down a bit, and as I slow it down, my metabolism is also
going
to slow down and adjust.
Yeah.
And you can adjust your brainwave frequencies by slowing down your
mm-hmm.
metabolism. And this is a way that you can calm yourself from an excited,
your
heart beating fast. If you go ahead and take it at a brisk pace, which probably is going to match a kind of an excited state, and then you gradually slow that down, you can move yourself from a state of agitation, anxiety, to a state where you have a little more calm. Another thing that you can do is to reframe, because your subconscious mind is just looking at the metabolism and reading the cues that it gets from your conscious mind. So when you are in a state of anxiety, your body has rapid heartbeat, has all these things. But when you're in a state of excitement, your body has a rapid heartbeat. So if you begin to speak to yourself in terms of, well, I'm very excited, then you can change distress into eustress. Distress is the negative kind of stress that's raising your cortisol levels and stressing out your heart and stressing out your emotional self and agitating your nerves. Eustress is the kind of stress that somebody who really loves climbing a mountain might feel when they're on the side of a mountain and they're climbing and it's very challenging and they're very focused and they're working very hard and it's very stressful. But it's the kind of stress that they really love, and it brings them a very deep calm and a very powerful focus, and they're using all of their strength, and they're working very hard, and they reach an attainment, and, I've made it to the mountaintop. And there's a endorphin rush that comes because we've overcome some obstacle, we've overcome some difficulty. and that's true of all of us. It's biological necessity that this happens. It's something that has happened, that has evolved with us for
mm-hmm.
millions of years. So you are, if you are facing something difficult and challenging, try to think of it in a way that you look forward to the time when you will overcome it, when you'll get past it, when you'll be free of it. And think in terms of, well, this is something that's challenging for me. This is something that requires a lot of focus and a lot of endurance. But think in positive terms. Think, I can do this. I will manage somehow. I'm going to get through this. I'm not going to let them break me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to become strong and rise to the occasion. And I will ultimately prevail in whatever ways I can even if I lose a lot, they can't get to this part of me that I choose to make strong by saying, I'm not going to let you break me. I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to stand up. I am standing in my honor. I'm standing in my own heart where there is justice and truth, even if it's not outside in this courtroom. I have justice and truth living inside me, and I'm going to stand for it absolutely the very best I can under these circumstances. And I know I'm in the right, so this makes me strong. It is a truth that we become weaker when we deceive someone, when we lie.
Right.
And you can test this through muscle testing. There's a very simple test. You put an arm out, someone else puts two fingers at your wrist and pushes down, and you resist as much as you can. And then you tell them your name while they push down, and that'll test how strong you really are. And they'll still be able to push your arm down, but you'll have all your strength because you're telling the truth.
Right.
And then tell them a different name and say, my name is Joe Smith, when you know your name isn't Joe Smith, and you will test weaker. Because when we lie, we weaken ourselves. When we are truthful, we strengthen ourselves. So if you're standing in your truth and you're standing there with justice in your heart and a mind that is focused on what is right and true, then you are stronger than all those damned liars you're surrounded with.
Right.
And that's what they're afraid of. That's why they're trying to attack you and bring you down, because they know that the truth will set you free and will, could very well be turned against them in a way that's going to bring them justice, which is what they fear because they know they're doing wrong. And so if you realize that in these court situations, oftentimes this is the situation you find yourself in where you're the only one standing there that's standing up for justice. And you might be the only one standing up for justice, for truth, for what is right. And that's a horribly difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have the power to get through it, and that's why we're offering you these techniques that may help to recognize if you, in other words, what I'm trying to do here in this moment is to give you the mental gymnastics that allow you to put a positive spin on things, so you realize, hey, look, you can be a jerk all you want, but I'm standing in truth and justice. So I'm not a jerk. I'm not a bad person.
Yeah.
You can call me a bad person, and I know it's a lie. You can say, you took advantage of your mother. No, I did not. And the truth is, no, I did not.
Yeah, exactly. But you got to stand up for yourself. So another thing you can do in court, and I used to do this all the time, I used to bring a little fidgeter with me. Fidgeters, you can bring something in, even as easy as your keys or something, that you could have them in your pocket and you could just fill them, and that will be like a mental volume too. I do that all the time. Wherever I go, I have something I play with, so always do something like that, because that distracts the part of your brain that makes you think of, like awful things, it's going to happen to you in court and stuff. I used to sit there and I used to look off into the corner and I'd be fidgeting and just try to space things out for a while because you get so scared of stuff. But, it really does help you think of something else while you're in that courtroom. You can also bring anything as easy as an inhaler, too. Like I talk about aromatherapy, there's inhalers that I could send you one or whatever, but you just put in, a little bit of like an essential oil of an orange, a little bit of a lavender in there, and you can just smell that. And that, just smelling that.
This is something that you have to determine
by
smelling essential oils yourself to determine, is this something I like?
Right.
It's not constricting my lungs,
Right. You have to be
because people are sensitive to different oils. Different people are sensitive to different oils.
But if you've heard essential oils and you like one, two, or three, you can always get an inhaler, put the few drops in there. You can also put it on a napkin as well and put it in your purse. You can always take it out and just smell it, and that will distract your mind.
You can also find in kind of the esoteric bookstore kind of place, a little necklace that has a piece of felt or something.
Felt in it, yes. I have
that,
two or three of those.
It's just a little, like a teardrop or a little tree
mm-hmm.
of life, or has a little design on it, and you drip the essential oils on that so that they're sort of with you and on you all day. And when you do botanical essences like that, I want you to understand that it's more than just the scent, because scent
mm-hmm.
evokes memory
mm-hmm.
and feelings, and scent
mm-hmm.
is something that is as ancient as life. We evolved following our noses and, you know, finding food, following our noses and finding fruits and finding flowers and finding honey, and you
mm-hmm,
know.
I
mean, we used our noses to determine, well, is this edible
or not?
You know?
It's olfaction.
The olfactory
yeah.
sense, yeah,
yeah, right.
Olfaction. We're
very awesome to understand.
And I believe, because I think the whole universe is vibrations, I believe that the life of the plant has a particular vibrational quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like the plant has a soul
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
It's a living being just as we are.
Exactly.
And when we distill these essential oils, then we're kind of distilling an essence of a particular kind of healing force
yeah.
that has to do with not only the aroma, but also the vibrational quality of that plant
mm-hmm.
that
and
is a healing plant. And
And it's beautiful. It's beautiful too. You can actually make all your own remedies too, and well as well. And use, you know, like inhalers for quartz. You can bring little samples of oils with you. I always take lemon with me when I travel, because it stops my upset stomach. Say you have a bug bite, you could always put lavender oil on that bug bite, and that'll stop it immediately. Always want to test oils on your forearm first to make sure you're not allergic to it. You also want to get really good oils. You don't want anything that's like a therapeutic C or D kind. You want to make sure, and I can give anybody any of this information where I get all my oils
from. Yeah,
there's
something called a GCMS report.
Right.
And what that means is gas chromatography.
Mass spectrometry.
Mass spectrometry.
Yeah.
Well, so, that's a big mouthful. But what it means is it's a particular kind of analysis where they look at the molecules in
oh,
that.
Oh, it's amazing,
and
guys.
Determine exactly and precisely what is the chemical structure of the essential oil that you're buying. And the best essential oils are going to have a CGMS report that it's either, you know, printed on it, CGMS tested, or
mm-hmm.
CGMS report, and it'll tell you where it's available.
right, and it gives you the strength of what's in that oil. And the
right.
most amazing thing to me of all, I was studying this in class, and they said that you could take one plant and plant the same plant, one in Africa, one in Brazil, and you could get a CT, which is a chemotype. It means that it's the same plant, but the soil's made it differently, and the land and all that has made it all differently. So now you've got the same plant that
have the same quality.
It doesn't have the same qualities because of the way it was.
Because
it
the
was
chemistry
it grew up.
Evolved differently
yeah.
according to the environment.
That's a chemotype, everybody, if you ever
mm-hmm.
want to know chemotype. But I studied this for 10 months, and now I can go out just about anywhere, and I get stressed out. I got to take all my remedies with me. But it's one thing you can do to help with the stress. Like I came home and made a couple remedies tonight, and I was like, thank God, because I was just so stressed out. But you can use it for cleaning, just a few drops and some castile soap you have in your soap. You don't need the chemicals in your home. You
and that's
can,
something else. It's important to realize and recognize the effects of stress on the body. When you're under high stress, you're going to deplete your B vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to make sure that you've got sources of B vitamins. Nutritional yeast is something you can add to your food. Just all kinds of recipes you can add nutritional yeast to. That's going to add B vitamins.
Right.
And you know, you want to do a little research into what vitamins are depleted by stress. I think vitamin D is
depleted. Yeah, vitamin
D
is. Boy, I tell you what, I've been stressed out too. I've been eating a lot of stuff too. I'm lots of vitamins. But yeah,
and,
D.
And the vast majority of people in this country are deficient in vitamin D.
A lot of people stress.
Partly because
so many.
We spend so much time indoors, partly because we're exposed to so much blue light and so little infrared and ultraviolet light. And because of the angle of the sun, if you're anywhere north of, I don't know, somewhere around Texas and Florida, then you're not getting an angle from the sun for about 9 months of the year that will actually give you vitamin D. So you're going to have to get it from dietary sources. So most people are deficient in vitamin D. And, you know, if you begin to study these kinds of things, then you're going to it doesn't take a whole lot of study. I'm talking about 10 minutes on the internet will answer the question, what vitamins do I need if I'm under a lot of stress? You know,
mm-hmm.
you can probably find out kind of the basics of that.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are there botanical essences like the oils, but there's also herbal remedies
right.
that can be very calming. Chamomile tea,
mm-hmm.
Green tea has some things that can be very uplifting, has theanine in it. Theanine contributes to a calm and and peaceful brain.
That's another thing is tea at night. Mm-hmm. Like chamomile, flipperium, and marshmallow root. I tell you what, mm-hmm. I live by that tea, but I've also made this tea in the morning now that I can't basically live without. You take like water, and I'm going to tell everybody this is such a cool tea. It's just you put water in there. We have a little pot, you know. And you squeeze in, you know, about, I don't know, probably about a tablespoon, maybe two tablespoons of lemon. And then you put in a little tablespoon of honey. Then you can put in like little mint in there. And you could put in a little cayenne, just a little bit, and a little bit of cinnamon if you want. And it just really kicks your morning in. I mean,
Did you say lemon? Yeah.
Yeah, lemon.
Yeah.
And you put honey in there and ginger, fresh ginger.
Oh, yes, fresh ginger.
Fresh ginger.
If you don't have fresh, you can use powder. But
we use fresh powdered ginger because I dehydrate all my own stuff. But that tea just really gets you going in the morning, and that's kind of really mellow me out.
Also that tea is going to help to flush your liver, and that your liver is the master detoxifier in your body.
Yeah.
And so, and if you want to facilitate that too, you could add a teaspoon or so. Of good quality olive oil, extra virgin olive oil.
Right.
Because that's going to mean, that's going to help the liver to flush out, to cleanse
mm-hmm.
itself. And if you don't cleanse the liver, then the liver can't cleanse the body once it's already sort of got a lot of heavy weight of toxins that have built up, both from stress and from environmental stresses and foods that you had to grab a fast food because you didn't have time to make food. We're always stressing our livers in society today, period. So it's always a good idea to take a few steps to do that self-care. These little self-care rituals are
and
important.
And give time to yourself. When you're in court, when you're talking to a guardian, just take some time to yourself. You know, you have to do that because you're going to be in burnout. I was in such a burnout mode. That I couldn't even answer my phones for a long time. I mean, I was like, Robin, answer the phone calls. I mean, every time the phone would ring, my sister would literally hide underneath the desk. She did. She goes, and then I'd say, oh, my gosh, Ruth, it's Attorney Arkin or whatever his name is, and she would be under that desk.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't kidding you. And I'd say, I would talk
I'm telling
to
you, I had to hold on to both of their phones for a while.
And this attorney would be talking to me. My sister would be down there holding her ears closed, and she's like, I can't do this. I said, you've got to do this. You've got to do whatever you got to do, but we've got to do this. And I had to be the big girl in some of those cases because she was way too stressed out.
Yeah.
But I literally went to school to figure out how to de-stress.
So there's another little tip that I'd like to share with you.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in your body called the vagus nerve.
Oh, I love that.
And
it's right
there. V-A-G-U-S, vagus
mm-hmm.
nerve. And it's, I think vagus is Latin for wanderer or something.
Yeah.
Because this nerve goes all over your body.
Mm-hmm.
But but there's a little exercise that you can use that helps you to reset your vagus nerve.
I do it. And I do it all the time.
This is a wonderful exercise to de-stress because stress affects the vagus nerve, and the vagus nerve affects the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how you reset your vagus nerve. Just sit with your back straight and your head balanced on your
neck. I do that.
I'll
do it with you, too.
Do an erect posture that's comfortable for you. And then look all the way over your right shoulder. You can even twist a little to your right and look as far as you can over your right shoulder. I'm doing it as I'm speaking. And look kind of behind you as much as you can, as far as you can look. And then just relax and come back to center.
Keep your body still.
And keep your body upright. And then turn the head to the left and look all the way over your left shoulder.
As far as you can.
As far as you can. Try to see the farthest back behind you as far as you can. You know, just keep turning the eyes back and the head all the way around. And lean the shoulder back a little bit so you can go farther. And when you've got a good full, as far as you can go for a minute, then relax and just return to center. And now the next thing you're going to do is you're going to get back to that centered place where your head is just balanced on your neck and on your shoulders. It's right above your body. It's not forward or backward. And it's not leaning back or leaning forward, just balanced. And your body is balanced over your sacrum. So it's, good posture. And then what you're going to do is, without moving your head at all, you're going to move your eyes to look as far as you can to the right, just as far as you can possibly look to your right. You're going to look and look and look just as far as you can look, but don't move your head. Just move, look your head, look your eyes all the way over as far as they can go and hold them there for a while.
You're
what
tired.
Happen,
look at you.
Well, what will happen is you'll yawn or you'll sigh. And when that happens, then what you've done, this is what the reaction that you're looking for is a yawn or a sigh. And then you go back to the center. You take a moment to relax and adjust. And then you go to the left side with your eyes only. Your head is remaining centered, and you're looking over your left to your left.
Now goes the yawn.
And you're looking as far as you can. You know, you're really stretching the eyes to see as far left as you can without moving your head.
It works.
And you'll probably have a yawn or a sigh.
Oh, God, everybody loves that. I'm getting a lot of people calling in.
And when you have done this exercise, what you have just done is reset your vagus nerve. Now, if you look over your right shoulder and you look back, you'll probably be able to see farther over your right shoulder.
It might look funny in court.
And if you look over your left shoulder, you'll probably be able to see farther over your left shoulder.
Yeah, it does work, everybody.
And whether you realize it or not, your stress level just dropped by several points. Whatever,
I'm tired. All of a sudden, I got kind of sleepy there, but it's good. It's a good feeling.
Because when you reset the vagus nerve, then your whole metabolism has just adjusted to a less stressed, more capable and prepared state. So this is something else that, you know, you can sort of subtly do. People may wonder what you're looking at, but just sort of look around like you're looking at the area, you know, and sort of look around like you're looking at the other. You might pretend you're looking for somebody, and then, you know, you don't have to move your head when you get back to the middle, but your eyes are looking. Nobody even needs to notice. You know, I'm still yawning because I'm still kind of doing this as I'm talking.
But it really does help.
It really helps to reset your vagus nerve. So remember that exercise, practice that exercise, get good at that exercise, and that's going to help you to de-stress.
Yeah. And these are just some of the remedies that we have learned, and you
that
can learned, also
that we know and that we use.
You can also get like a diffuser. I have quite a few here, but since I have a dog, you got to remember that if you have animals, be a little cautious. Make sure it's roomy in there. If you do use essential oils,
and by roomy she means there's enough room to it to where it's
a dog,
well ventilated.
A dog can walk out if he wants to if he doesn't like the smell. I actually had to give up oils in my bedroom because my dog don't like oils.
The bedroom's not very
so
large,
like,
and the dog, it's got such a sensitive nose that it just is painful for him. He can't stand it.
Yeah, I know. So I have to make all my stuff myself. I don't burn any diffusing. But if you're living alone or at a family, and you could do it for colds and flus. Put essential oils into a little bit of water, and you can diffuse that. Probably
even
two or three drops.
Even if you don't have a diffuser, you can take a pot of water and turn it all the way on low. I mean, it just has to heat up very slowly and very gradually. And then you put, you know, a few drops of an essential oil that you like into that water. And so, and you can do a little research online. It's not hard to find. And you can figure out what oils are good for your particular situation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, peppermint is antiseptic.
Peppermint is what you want if you have a cold or a flu.
Yeah, yeah.
And you
unless
just,
you're
and
sensitive
you just,
to it, you know.
Yeah, and we did that whole time we were doing that, burning up that peppermint
well,
when we had
you
the
know,
flu.
Just a very, very low simmer because you're not trying to boil the oil or burn up the oil, but what you are trying to do is just evaporate
it
gradually into the air.
Right.
And diffuse it into the air because it will, as you raise the temperature of the water, the oil will reach a point where it vaporizes and goes to the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be breathing it. And this is, you know, it literally can kill a lot of bacteria in the air. It can help to help your mood. It can help your spirit. It can help your body to
and many people can get it. Yeah.
Feeling better.
And I mean, many people can use up to like maybe 10 oils. And I could help you understand how to use those oils. In my oils, I probably have over 100 different oils.
Well, as an aromatherapist, you're a practicing aromatherapist, and you actually can use them in a therapeutic way for people that, you know, you do an intake with them, you see what oils they're sensitive to, you see what their circumstances and conditions are, and then
their
address their conditions of their body and their needs with the oils that they're in, that are in harmony with them that they're going to be able to use and enjoy using. And so you know, so it's reasonable for you to have 100 oils, but most people, if you have
four or five,
is going to do the average person just fine if you just find a few that you like. And you can go into health food stores sometimes, and there'll be samplers that you can actually just, you know,
but always try
dip the little glass thing in the thing and see what it smells like.
There's a lot of
really
good
really
books
like
on
one.
There. There's a lot of really good books, and there's Andrea Boget. She started with the Aroma Head Institute. She has a really good book out. There's so many books that I have, and if you just want something to look into to get an idea, I can actually read a whole essential oil book and understand everything they're saying now.
Which
and
is important. I want you to know you do have to be careful. Essential oils can be overwhelming, especially for little children who might be more sensitive.
Pregnant women.
Pregnant women might be sensitive
elderly
to them.
People.
Elderly people.
And children.
Pets.
And children and pets.
Yeah. All of these respond differently. So if it's just you in your home or it's just you and a loved one, then you might want to do a little research or consult an aromatherapist who can fill you in about whatever oils you're wanting to use.
Yeah,
and
fascinating.
How much and how to.
And if I can't figure it out, I go to my school and they have like
right,
30 teachers there that'll say, this is what you need to do.
Right.
So once in a while I run into that, I'm like, wow, I need something for this ailment, like foot. You know, I have plantar fasciitis in there, but that stuff is helping. That orange and fennel is absolutely making that feel better. I think that's
sure
what's going
is.
On.
Sure
anyway, we're going to take some callers in here. Hillary, what do you think about all this so far?
I think it's phenomenal, you know, that there is some sort of outlet to, you know, decrease the stress that people have.
Yeah, I know. And I always tell everybody, take that break for yourself because you can get so overwhelmed. And I remember not seeing my mom for over 3 years, you know, three and a half years. I was like, man, I got to basically numb myself, you know. So, you know, I started schools and I actually went over and helped my mom's nursing home one time go over there and they were just learning about essential oils and I was helping them tell them which oils they should be using at the nursing home. And so they started using orange and they started using lavender and it was really starting to actually smell better in there too. So I was, you know, I told me, look, I can help you with this. And they did. I went over there and I would help them which oils to use and how to use them. But it was fun. It was very encouraging.
Well, it also seemed to help the residents.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, calm them down. We know how to calm them down and light them up during the day, you know? But it was quite fun, you know. But, yeah, if you have any questions, call into the show. I'll give you the phone number. And each week we talk about something else, but I thought tonight, let's talk about stress. You know, it's everyone's always telling me, what can we do for it? And Rob and I are like, we could actually probably write a couple books on this stuff, because we studied, I've been to school.
We've kind of had to.
So anyway, I'm going to give you the phone number to call into the show. Is 845-241-9962. You press a 1, and I notice that we do have some hands up. So let's take in a phone call. Let's take in a 616 number. Do you have a question or a comment or ask me a question?
616, hi. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hello.
And
hi. Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. This is Brandy from Michigan.
Hi, Brandy.
I've been better. I just wanted to call and say that people that are getting defeated in the courts, to look into your court website and get into the forms, there are a lot of hidden gems there. For instance, when you are fighting for guardianship of a family member and you have other interested parties, there is what is called, for instance, in Michigan, it is a it is the form PC 561, I do believe, and that is what is called a waiver and consent form. So by signing that or having that filled out eliminates the guardian ad litem from playing both sides.
Oh, wow. And that's up in where?
Michigan, but I'm sure that there's these hidden little gems in every single website there. So there's a lot of hidden gems there that you can find. And, for instance, my mother actually unfortunately passed away last week. But
yeah.
I finally made headway with the courts, and we've had the same guardian ad litem for 17 years, and I was finally able to file for guardianship again, and they kept denying me. And then finally I get a court hearing in the mail, a notice of hearing with a new guardian ad litem assigned to the case and all the paperwork redone. So the courts have now taken it upon themselves to start doing paperwork, which is against everything that the system encompasses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I figured out a lot of these little loopholes and getting these forms filled out, and I'm outwitting, outsmarting, and outplaying them, and they don't know what to do.
Right. That's good, though, because...
Outwit, outsmart, and outmaneuver is...
You had to become your own superhero, and I don't know. I know you've been upset. I'm so sorry about your mom. And we've been following you with your mom, like, every day. I mean, every day for I don't know how many years.
Yeah. And, like, everything that happened, the courts, I think, forced her into hospice. And she was removed from the nursing home, and we were told that she would be able to remain on hospice in the hospital. And... they decided one day to get up and decided she could no longer eat, drink, or swallow, and they decided to remove her IV and ship her back to the facility, and then the facility ended up denying her meds that she had been on for over a week, and she passed away within 24 hours. But why would you do that to someone? Like, what? Like, and then it's COVID, in COVID lockdown, so she no longer could be surrounded by family and comfort. Like, what they did to my mother is not right, and I ended up being stuck in this room, not able to leave, and I ended up advocating for my mom and recording her last words, and a lot more is about to be exposed, but, like, hospice, the hospital, everybody was warned, everybody was begged, and they all failed and breached their duties, and it's just egregious what people go through.
Oh, I know. It's horrifying.
I'm so glad to hear you because you're like I said earlier, you know, you stand in your truth, you're on the right side. You're standing up for justice, truth, and righteousness, even surrounded by people that are all bowing down to these Moloch with their unethical and unprincipled behavior. That leads to the death of people that we love and leads to these actions that are unconscionable on behalf of
alarming. The day I could file for guardianship again in Michigan, You're made to wait 182 days from when you're in court last before you can refile for guardianship. And on the 180th day, I went to the court and I walked in, and mind you, my mom's been in guardianship for 23 and a half years. I've been in this court maybe five times in the last 10 years. And when I walked in on Monday morning at 9 a.m., I knew something was very wrong when I was greeted by name. Like, how did they? So I know I'm making waves and they know who I am. So when you're greeted by name in a probate court, when you, they have 30 to 40 clerks, like, it just makes no sense. And I was like, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But then later that day is when I found my mom unresponsive. So I feel like they didn't want my, they didn't expect me to know what to do or to keep trying.
Yeah, but
and then
the love
just like
you gave
everything
your mom
fell.
And the postings that you did and the love that you both had was
and
just amazing.
I also want to applaud you and call our listeners' attention to the fact that one of the very best things that you can do for the kind of stress that you're going to face is to keep your wits about you and fight as hard as you can, which is what
right. And
what
well,
Brandy
it's just also really weird. I don't know, and it's really just weird to me how guardianship works, because when it came down to my mom being under guardianship and making the decision of going into hospice or not, they allowed my mother to make that choice, who was already deemed incompetent, but yet she made that choice. And then they also, when someone is under guardianship and they die, I had no idea. If I had not gone to the funeral home, I'm being financially responsible and taking care of my mother because her guardian was not going to. But when you are under guardianship and say it's a parent, I don't know how many people know this, but I just learned this, so I chose to cremate my mother. But in order to do that, they don't need the guardian's permission. They need the children. So if you have three children, you need two out of three children. If you have four
right.
children, you need three out of four signatures. And so, like, what's the point of trapping all these families? And then people are thinking they don't have any rights even at the end of life, but it's like they're all they're reinstated and restored, like as if it never happened.
They're reinstated once they die, the guardianship is done with. They have
right,
no
but it
so.
Just it
you
makes no
money.
Sense to me how
you
I'm not allowed to participate
family.
In her life,
right.
but I'm allowed to in her death.
Right, exactly. You're not supposed to talk about her in her life, but you can say what she can do when she dies. Now, in my mom's case, I had to go to a public administrator and ask them, "You need to pay for a funeral," and I just said, "You need to." They had to call up. The funeral place, the public minister says, oh, I'm going to pay for a casket. I'm going to pay for this. I got the flowers. I said, this is where you got to get the flowers. I basically had her do everything. After that, she sent the kids a little bit of check, and that was it. But as soon as they die, it's over with. The whole thing's over with. A lot of people don't know that. They don't know that it's over, you know.
Right. And so I'm able to go, and, like, because I'm her oldest child, I get a copy of the death certificate. I get to control what's on there. So they emailed that to me, and I wanted to make sure, because she didn't have COVID, that they sent her to a facility for a whole day to die that was on COVID lockdown, that she wasn't being labeled as COVID, and they're getting another kickback. So I think I kind of outwitted a lot of people and kind of put a wrench in all of their abilities, but I think with me filing for guardianship, and I think that's why she was forced back to the facility, because the courts were being forced to act on my petition, and they can't do that if she's under hospital care. They have no control at that point. They need the facility to run their game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you did a fantastic job with your mom, considering, you know, and it's just a lot of stress. I mean, I remember taking care of my mom and going to the nursing home, but the hospital was very good with us. My mom's nursing home was wonderful, but just losing a parent, your mom, she was my everything. Absolutely everything.
And sadly, from the stories we hear, you were one of the very fortunate few.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm so glad you got to be with her while she passed. So, no, that,
yeah,
that's
I'm just
amazing.
Glad that I got to control the last 2 weeks of her life and make sure that she was advocated to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was, I think the smiles that you and your mom gave the nation was amazing. I mean, we're always looking for those videos, and it was good. It was she was such a cute lady, too, you both of you. you both
yeah,
have
but
smiles.
Just if anybody ever
oh,
has
ooh,
any questions,
no.
if they anybody has any questions about any court hearings, I will be more than happy to help you dive into your local courts and see what's available and how you
yeah.
can represent yourself and help yourself.
I think we're gonna actually have you come back onto our show and be a guest to talk about that when you're able to. I know that you've just, you know, you just had this with your mom, and I really didn't want to stress you out too much about asking you, but let's try it in a couple weeks and have you come to our show.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And there's also another big mission starting if you guys want to get involved. It's called documenters.org, where people in chosen cities are getting paid by their cities to go into city council meetings, legislative meetings, court hearings, and you get paid to document and tweet. So you are allowed to record. You are allowed to no longer pay for FOIA requests. You are trained and you get paid by the cities that you live in. So that
oh, wow.
is just rolling out. I've got my hands dipped into a lot of things right now, and everything is just piling on at once, it seems like. But I start that mission this weekend. I had to put that off for a couple weeks because of everything happening with my mom. But that's hopefully going to be in a city in every state and multiple cities if we can get enough people. But that is documenters.org. And I know that it's just starting to pick up in a lot of the bigger cities.
We will help you with that. That sounds great.
Yeah,
we will help you.
Like
we'll get that up
project
on our show.
We'd love to support. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Faces Radio will support you with whatever you want to do. But whenever you feel like it, contact me on Messenger, Brandy, and we'll talk about
it. Yeah, we'd like to do a whole show
yeah.
with you, I think.
Yeah. We definitely want to do a whole show
like
with
to.
You. That'd be great. In the meanwhile.
yeah, that would be awesome. And thank you for giving me some time.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, and just try to distress as much as you can. That's why we're talking about this tonight, because it's a stressful world out there,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But
we'll keep you live. How about if we keep you live? Let's bring on a 408
number.
Yeah,
if you don't mind, let's just keep you live. You can continue to join in the conversation.
Yeah, we have a 408
there.
Number.
Okay.
408.
Hi, 408. You're on the air.
Live
thanks
Faces
for calling.
Radio.
You're live on Faces Radio. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
Hi. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate the lady that brought up this whole thing, because it really has an effect on me just listening to what was being said about people that are in these places where other people are responsible for their welfare. It's true that a lot of people that work for these places don't have the best interest of your loved one in their thought process, because they've been trained to do things a certain way. And if you ever been amongst these people while they're doing what they were trained to do, and you said something to them, they would smile at you, and half of them don't speak English. So, you know, you're just looking at what they're doing and they seem to be doing their job, but that's because you're there.
Right.
And when you're not there, how do they treat your loved one? Do they treat them with dignity? Do they hurt them when they're changing their dressings because they're incontinent and they can't do for themselves? And I'm aware of the hospice group. And they have people that are scouts that go out and talk to you or whoever's in charge of the person, which you said the mother was in charge of the decision-making. And they told her that it would be in her best interest to go with hospice. instead of the insurance that she was under before that was now canceled because of her cancock on mm-hmm. what she was listening to. So you did point out something that was a problem. That's where the problem in lies, that hospice will take over and do what they feel is necessary as opposed to what you feel, which would be in the best interest of your loved one. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. A lot of people are aghast to realize that oftentimes a person gets moved into hospice and then that becomes the authority over life and death for that person.
Mm-hmm.
They are brought to the end of life on the schedule that suits the people running that hospice organization.
And the thing about it,
it may have nothing to do with the quality of life that that person had before that or the quality of life that that person is capable of.
Now, I remember when my mom was in a nursing home and she went into a hospice. The hospice actually worked with her to get better, and they took her out of hospice. Mm-hmm. It was really weird.
Well,
she lived for another year.
Supporting and helping someone.
She did. And they supported her. They made her healthy and strong, and they put her back out within the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to see that people. Go ahead.
I don't know where you're from, but I know that when you said when she was in hospice, she had to sign papers in order for them to take over the responsibility that hospice takes. So that cancels out the insurance that they had before. So
mm-hmm.
so that puts you in a position where you're like, well, hold on a second. What you want to ask questions about the insurance thing, and they won't answer those questions because they're feisty little shit, and they want you to sign because they're not interested in what you're saying. For one,
to think about hospice is, and this is why insurance gets brought up, and I just learned this in the last 2 weeks, it's kind of a catch-22. Once somebody is entered into hospice, the reason insurance switches and insurance changes and the liabilities change is because when you're entered into hospice, you no longer have a care plan that doctors have to follow. So they no longer can breach their duties. So therefore, if you're on care and comfort and you just are at quality of life, if something happens, they pretty much get you to either sign a do not resuscitate order. And what's done is done.
Okay, listen, let me say something right here, please. Let me say something. I'm going to interject something real quick. This is going to blow your mind. Okay, so people that are in the condition that we're talking about, they got diabetes, they have dementia, they have Alzheimer's, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Often.
Sometimes,
okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. I was there in the memory care unit with the people that were there, and they were all in wheelchairs, and they had them outside, sitting outside, and they can only communicate a certain way. And they were gravitating towards me. And so I was obviously just talking to them, like as if they understand what I'm saying. I tried to say it in a basic way. I said, well, the nurses here sure are nice. And I was looking at them, and they shook their head no. And I said, well, they look beautiful. And I was like, and I was just trying to be funny though, but I said, they must treat you good here, right? And they shook their head no. And then the nurses came over and said, get back in your room. And they were shaking their head no. And they were taking them back in the room. And I was like, and I was there to see my dad, right? You know, and I was just like, I was blown away, you know, because you could say what you want to say about dementia, Alzheimer's, and all this and that. But, you know, there are moments, I'm going to tell you something, there are moments when they're lucid. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you that I enjoy those moments. And I don't care what anybody else says, you can kiss my ass. No way, dude. No way. And I'm taking advantage. No.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand what they're going to say. They're going to say, well, you don't understand. I go, I understand a lot more than you, and you give me credit for. So. But I do appreciate your comments, and I appreciate you hitting the like button on the way out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on to the show. We've got a fair amount of callers, and we've only got about 10 minutes left of the show, but thank you for calling in to Faceless Radio. We're here every week, so if you want to call in and jump in, you can. You can call us up and talk. We have different discussions. We got a lady coming on next week. Her name is Teresa Lyles, I think her name is. She's going to be coming and talking to us, and then we're trying to get quite a few more people lined up.
And, you know, I'm glad that this caller joined us because he brought a valid point in, and that's something that I feel is really, really important for us to remember, and that is that each of us has some capacity in general to communicate. Now, there may be exceptions, you know, if you're suffering from a wasting disease and you've lost all nerve function and now you're trapped in your body and can't communicate, well, that's a different story. But even someone who's suffering, you know, in the way of Alzheimer's, diabetes, these things he's talking about, they may lose some mental function, yes. But if you say, well, are you being treated well, they can shake their head yes or no. You know,
I went to a nursing home every day for like 4 years.
And you know, they can reach out and try to follow you out the door because they want to escape. I mean,
was what was happening. Exactly.
You try to escape all the time.
No, I know.
I had a couple of them.
That'd be the first time you tried to do is get me out of here.
That was cute.
But
you know, someone would just follow them.
This is terrible. It's terrible what they're doing to people in there. And I see the people. There was people that were there that were the daughter. I think she was a daughter, and she jumped right in with those people the way they were acting, and so she was participating in his. It was detrimental to his rehabilitation, is what I'm trying to say. You understand?
Right.
They're supposed to rehabilitate
the
guy, but they're fucking over here doing this shit. I'm like, hey, I can't fucking stand up and sit there and say, oh, you're doing a wonderful job when you're an asshole.
Wow.
There's many ways to do any job. I mean, you go to a restaurant, the waiter can slam your food down and be rude. The waiter can say your food down and say, is there anything else like
that? But nursing homes need to have more regulation, man. There's some serious things
going on there,
you know?
It really is a place where people are given the power of control and life and death over other people. And oftentimes, I think very often, there's
a... But you have to be like Randy.
That can have a corrupting influence, depending on who's running the place and who's in charge and how they set the tone and how they set things up. But because your mother was in a place where I think they were treating people, you know, the vast majority of the time, really well and taking care of them as best
they really could. Really good. They were a really good nursing home. And Brandy, she was on it. She was on it all the time there, looking at the ants and looking at everything. She was on it.
Yeah.
I've got 20 years of documenting in there.
Documenting nonstop, absolutely.
And that, you know, that's the kind of thing where documenters.org might be, that's the kind of place where they need to be, maybe.
Let's bring on another caller. We've got an 847 number going to go in. I'm going to keep everybody's mics open for a bit. 847, you're on Faces Radio.
Welcome to the show. 847, you're here. You're live on the air. Are you there?
Okay, I think that's me.
Yes, that's you.
I just had a comment, two comments. One on the funeral arrangements in Crook County, Illinois. The public guardian has already made funeral arrangements for Mrs. Salas in her case, and not burial with her family or her husband or her parents and that and her family.
Right, is this our friend Dean?
Pardon?
Is this our friend Dean?
Yes.
Yes, thank you for calling me. Go ahead.
Go on.
Go ahead, Dean.
Second comment, your show last week or your program last week, I felt was heading your program in a positive direction with Mr. Ditkowski on the program
He's great.
With specifics. No and, ums, and you knows. He was very articulate in what he had to say and how he said it. He knows his stuff.
Right.
And I thought that that was a good direction that the program was. I would hope that it would continue in that direction.
Right, and we're going to have him back onto our show as well. I mean, I really enjoy, you know, talking to several of our guests that have come on, and I like them to inform, you know, like Mr. Dukowski.
Right. Mr. Dukowski is very well informed. He's been, you know, he's been in the profession of law for many years.
Mm-hmm. And he sees things differently as some other people do. I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also know that the man, I think, in my opinion, has a big heart. He's tried to help you out. He understands what's going on. He knows the system is corrupt from when he first went into being a lawyer many years ago. He says, man, it's really different now. He goes, you could go in for a RICO and you might not win. It is so tough out there. I get it. I get it because, man, I've had some other people go up against like kind of like RICO charges and they didn't win. So I get what he's trying to say. And I think you're right, Mr. Salas. We do need to bring him back, and we'll do that probably once in a while, like once a month or something, for him to talk to our guests. Because great show. I mean, we had so many calls, I couldn't even keep track that night.
And
I mean,
I think what we're also discussing is kind of the general timber of intelligent discussion that talks mm-hmm. about real world solutions to some of the problems that people are facing. And I want you to know that that's not lost on me. I do hear what you're asking for.
Right.
And we do honor that. And we try to search out guests that can enlighten and enlighten
right.
the lives of those.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get Richard Fine on as well. He's from California. I think he's going to come on and talk about a bill that they're trying to pass out there in California. I've got a lot of people that actually get a hold of me now instead of me trying to hunt people down for the show. They call me and say, hey, can we come on? I'm like, sure. So I've got, you know, quite a few people. I'm going to get Linda Parker Brown on it.
I have another comment.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. There's another person that you've had on the show, on the program, was Janet Phelan, who has
she's great.
Done a lot of investigative research and pinpointed where the corruption is. There are also...
Right.
There was a gentleman, a preacher, Ralph, I think, on the Marty Oakley show, who now
Reverend
has
Ralph.
Been knocked off. Well, one at a time. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
He's been knocked off the show, but he would point things out, and there are tactics that can be conveyed to the populace who are involved in the guardianship, such as what to do when they won't allow you to visit with your loved one or with a ward.
Mm-hmm.
That is a tactic that they use, and that can be explained on a program. I would be happy to do that on a program for you. But
okay,
it would help people. They get trapped into that, and providing supervised visitation, it's a trap.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It sure is.
It's a trap.
Things like that should be brought out rather than, scent oils and things.
Right. Well, you know, we also do that because so many people call me up and they say, what do you do for the stress? And we're just pointing out some issues that you could do therapeutically. Yes, we can talk to attorneys. We can do all kinds of things, but there's so many other things that help as well.
But
if you can't get an attorney, sometimes you can't even find an attorney to talk to. You got to do remedies.
This to you was not your cup of tea, and I understand that. That's perfectly fair,
I
honor your comment.
I can.
But we are finding our listeners, and there are those who have asked for this kind of information. So we're trying to cater to
right.
broad audience
So
that does include people that do want to hear these things.
Right, and we'll get everybody back on our show. So,
but, you know, if you've got people that you'd like to recommend, like you just did, then we'll be happy to try to get them on the show, because we're always looking for good guests.
Yeah, then get a hold of me. And you can reach us by Facebook.
We had a guest
cancel,
and we had to come up with a show. So we decided, well, let's talk about some things that we know that are helpful that people have asked us.
Oh, my gosh, and I tell you what, things happen. Let me see if I can get one more caller. It's a 330 number. We only have about 20 seconds left, 330. You have a question real fast.
Hey, it's Allie. I just wanted to say I love the show. I think it was great, and I'm really sorry you guys have been through so much and so many losses, but the fact that you're trying to help people with their stress in a natural way is awesome. So thank you.
Yeah.
We love you.
I had everything in a natural way.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm allergic to alcohol, so I couldn't do that. I'm not going to get into drugs. So that's what, you know, I chose the same path. So they're amazing, and everyone should try them. So thank you.
I clean with them. I work with them. I bathe in them. I do everything with them.
They're wonderful. They're wonderful. So thank you. I thought the show was great. I learned some things. So keep it up.
Yeah. So if you need anybody needs help with essential oils, just get a hold of me at Faceless Radio. You know, for all the probate people, I will be glad to help you for free. I'll talk
thank
to you.
Thank you.
I'll help you get your stress. I mean, there's a lot of remedies you can do out there.
And
if you
can
find your attorney.
And, of course, we also help people to network with others help them, you know, deal with whatever your situation may be. We're not lawyers, but we know a few. And we also know a lot of activists that can band together and help to make things happen. So contact us for those reasons as well.
Yeah, Hillary, did you have anything you want to say before we close up tonight?
Thank you so much. It was a great show, and people need some sort of outlet to, you know, quash the stress that they're going through in guardianship. So, and natural, not drugs, alcohol. So very informative, and we fight the good fight, and we will continue to fight to free the elderly and disabled from guardianship that are unnecessary, and I'm proud to be here with the two of you. Thank you.
Thank you. And
thank you.
Like
it's
I said,
privilege and honor always.
Yeah, we gave Marcy Friedman the night off, so keep her in your prayers. You know, she's still crying for her mama too. You know, we've all lost our mamas on the show. You know, and we all know how it feels. You know, our loved ones, and like my husband, you know, he's gone. And boy, I tell you, I'm going to go get some more oil.
we don't need a recap. But, but remember, justice requires
transparency
and accountability.
I heard you say that the other day, by the way, Allie. I thought that was pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I guess.
Giving up is not an option.
Yeah, giving up
I'm
is
sorry,
not an option.
What,
go ahead.
Allie?
What's that?
I heard you say giving up was, you said justice requires transparency and accountability, and I thought, I know where she got that from. Anyway, that was pretty funny. Okay, so we've got a lot of things coming out. We're still working with a lot of other people, networking with AUI, America United International. Working with News for Us World. We've been working with a lot of organizations, so we'll keep everybody posted what's going on around the nation. Get a hold of us at facelessradio@hotmail.com. I guess we'll see you next week. We've got some great guests coming on. I guess we'll see you all then. We're going to play one of my favorite things, Judicial Integrity Project. You don't know you're a judge. Here you go. We
demand transparency.
We demand transparency.
And accountability.
And accountability.
In every judge from sea to sea.
In every judge from sea to sea.
We just want integrity.
We just want integrity.
Judicial hides a lot from you.
Judicial hides a lot from you.
There's not much in public view.
There's not much in public view.
From this darkness they won't budge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
From this darkness they won't budge.
That's why you don't know your judge.
That's why you don't know your judge.